tonight, the second half of the evening. There's a man mentioned in the Old Testament a number of times and his descendants. His name is Amalek. A-M-A-L-E-K, Amalek. And there's been some speculation as to who this Amalek was. Now there is in the Old Testament an Amalek of the line of Esau. Or a son or a grandson, somewhere close. But Amalek is mentioned long before Esau is on the scene, before he's even born. A long time. Now, the first mention of Amalek is in Genesis 14:7. And that's a long time before Esau. Genesis 14:7. Now, this is an invasion of east of the Jordan, especially, and also west of the Jordan when they got down toward the Dead Sea, by Amraphel, king of Shinar. And there were some others. And they made war with some of these kings that were in this. King of Sodom, king of Gomorrah, king of Admah, king of Zeboiim, king of Bea, and which is Zoar. And we find in verse 7, and they returned and came to in Mizpah, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites, that dwelt in Aziz and Tamar. So this is back in the early days of Abraham in the land. And, of course, Esau would be a grandson of Abraham, yes. Because Jacob and Esau were sons of Isaac. And of course, if he were a descendant of Esau, he'd be way ahead. Now we have two peoples mentioned here, but I'm especially talking about Amalek now, but you also have the Amorites. And these are quite significant because we can see in them as we read the history of them and their activities and so on, we can see there a pattern of things that have happened ages and ages before and a pattern of things that have happened since then and possibly will happen in the future. So there's a pattern there. That's one reason for studying these things. Remember, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable. And it surely is. So he was not the son of Esau. Now we'll turn over to Exodus 17:8-11. Exodus 17. Israel had just gotten out of Egypt, crossed the Red Sea, just getting going, headed out for Mount Sinai. And it says, then came Amalek. Well, the then tells us something. Well, there's another item in here. I remember this land was very scarce on water. Oh, in the winter time, some of those gullies would be rushing with the water, but just as soon as spring came and the rain stopped, why, they'd all be dried up all summer. Now, Israel left Egypt about the beginning of the harvest time. The rains would be ceasing, and there would be no rains until later on in the fall. They have the former and the latter rain, two crops. And Israel didn't have any water. And they began to murmur about it. In fact, Moses said to the Lord, he says, what shall I do unto this people? They be almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said in verse 5, go on before the people, and take with thee of the cities of the elders of Israel, and thy rod wherewith thou smotest the river. Take in thine hand and go. Behold, I will stand before thee there upon the rock in Horeb, and thou shalt smite the rock, and there shall come water out of that the people may drink. And Moses did as the angel of the in the sight of the elders of angels of Israel. I'm getting my words all tangled up. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. Now water, as I said, was quite a commodity in those times, and remember, during the time of Isaac, that he dug a number of wells, and the Philistines had come and claimed them. And he moved on, till finally they got tired or something, made a little treaty, and he finally stopped making wells. And so just as soon as a well was found here in a rock, there's plenty of water, and these Amalekites heard about it, why, they're going to have that water. So here's the reason. And so in verse 8, then came Amalek and fought with Israel and Rephidim. And that is where the rock was. Well, now something's going to get started. Well, we'll go on to the 11th verse here and see what we find. And Moses said unto Joshua, choose us out men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him, and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. When he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. And so went on the fight. Well, that's quite a story. Now, we're told in some of the history that these Amalekites had here an army of around 400,000 men. And how many did Israel have of men that could bear arms when they left Egypt? Do you remember the figure? I've said it so many times. 663,550 against 400 million. That's better. Yeah, 400,000. Well, and these Amalekites are fierce. Now, if you were able to read some of the archaeological books that have been written, and some of the records that they've dug up and translated in some of those times, you can get a little picture here of what was going on. Remember that Israel had been in Egypt for 215 years. From the time that Jacob went down with his wagons and his family and so on, it was 215 years. And at the end of that time, when it was time for him to be delivered, there were 10 plagues loose on Egypt. But the Bible doesn't tell us about the 11th plague. but you can find it in the history books. And it was worse than all the rest of them put together in some ways. When the plagues were on Egypt, there were worldwide convulsions, and so on accompanying that, and records of it in practically every country in the world. And some of the reports of the time said that the sea came in with great waves, and especially the Arabian Peninsula. And that's where these Amalekites had been living, at the southern part of the Arabian Peninsula. That'd be over east of Egypt, a little bit north, not much. And the report said that there were great earthquakes, and there was fire, and storms, and heavy clouds, and that the clouds, when they passed over, left desolation behind, and everything dried up. And there was another thing, too, along with that. These records are mentioned several times, that they were afflicted by millions of little bitty ants. Now, whether the convulsions of the earth and so on broke up ant hills and so on, I don't know. I don't know much about the ants of that part of the country anyhow. But these things have been recorded from back in those times. And evidently these Amalekites were getting out of there. And at the same time, Israel were getting out of Egypt, and they met. Now, if you take your map and look at it, you can see how they coming, the Amalekites coming up from the Sinaitic Peninsula, or the Arab Peninsula, had come right into this same neighborhood when Israel was going out of Egypt and going toward the south and the north. And so they met, and they did. And this was a battle. I'm going to read a little bit more here. But Moses' hands were heavy. Ever tried to hold your hand up a long time? And they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, one on one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited the men, got the best of him, as he said, and his people, the Amalek's people, with the edge of the sword. Now there is also a record in the Bible that Amalek had teamed up somewhat with the Midianites, and later on had teamed up also with the Philistines and some of the Canaanites who lived along the shore of the Mediterranean. And I'll anticipate this a little bit. It'll come up again, but we meet them again after about 40 years from this incident here, when Israel were at Kadesh Barnea, finally, to make a pass into the land, and had sent spies into it. The Amalekites were all settled along the south border. They'd have to go through Amalekite land to get into the promised land. So the enemy was in the way. And, of course, Israel were scared. The reports of the ten spies was contrary anyhow to any good fortune. And in their memory of what the Amalekites did to them, they received them. And they were scared. And so they didn't want to go into the land. Verse 14, and the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book. Oh, Moses is to write a book. Well, I guess he did. And rehearse it in the ears of Joshua, for I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi, For he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. And that's exactly what happened. Now, let's see here about some of these generations. Just one thing here in connection to this. Joshua was to go and get men and fight. But Moses and Aaron and Hur were up on the mountain praying. There's a place for both, see? To fight and to pray. In that time at least. Well, we'll run over to Judges 3. That's quite a little skip for us. Judges 3, 13 to 15. Here we are, Judges 3, 13 to 15. Well, I see it. This is Eglon, king of Moab, comes in here. And he gathered unto him, that is this Eglon of Moab, gathered unto him the children of Ammon. Children of Ammon. Now, Ammon was a son of Lot. And so he got the children of Ammon. And Amalek. And went and smote Israel, and possessed the city of palm trees. I don't remember. I guess there's a city called that name. It says in Deuteronomy, if I can find it too, but I'll not take the trouble. So the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. Well, there you see the Amalekites figure in this. Now, the Amalekites did scatter over the world quite a little bit. Maybe I better give you just a little bit about the Amalekites here, so you know a little bit more about who they are. Now, we found the first mention of them over in Genesis 14:7, but we're not told who their father was. However, in the genealogy or the sons of, say, of Shem, Shem had a son by the name of Laud, L-A-U-D, that doesn't mention any children of his. But in the records of Islam, that is, the Mohammedans, they have the genealogy that Laud had a son by the name of Faris, P-H-A-R-I-S. He had a son by the name of Georgian, and he had a son by the name of Tassim, and his son was Amalek. So we have the genealogy and other records, but don't have it in the Bible. And so he settled, as I said a while ago, along the Arabian Peninsula, and along with the Midianites later. He also was sometimes mixed up with the Amorites. And really at the time that Israel were at Kadesh Barnea, a bunch of the Amalekites were spread across, as I said, just below Canaan, really, just below the Philistines, over to the hill country on the east, and there were the Amorites. But the most of the Amorites were up on the east side of Jordan from just above the Dead Sea, on up to practically Damascus and through that part of the country. And the Amalekites the time that Israel went into the land were divided into two sections. And the northern section was Bashan, and the king was King Og, the man who had the iron bedstead we talk about in the Bible. Must have been a giant. And the southern part of the strip along there, coming clear down to across from Jericho, was Sihon. And those were Amorites. And along with Sihon down there were, of course, a few of the Amalekites. And also south of Sihon was Moab and Ammon and Edom. Edom stretching clear down to the Sinaitic Peninsula at that time, bordering on to the Amalekites and the Midianites. Well, of course, if you get a map of that at one period, it'll be having scattered one way and another time another. Because at one time, Moab was spread up to almost the Sea of Galilee. And these giants took their land from them and shoved them on south. So that's a little bit of the picture there of how these spread around. Now, while we're at it, another thing about the Amalekites. Get back to them. I said that the 11th plague of Egypt was the Amalekites. And I didn't go on and explain that. Because after that battle with Israel, and they didn't want any more of it, they left. They invaded Egypt. Egypt's army and their king were dead in the bottom of the Red Sea. And the 10 plagues had devastated the country. Not too many dwellings left. The land was practically ruined by all of the things that happened to it. Vegetation, trees, and so on, by the hail that fell. And they went into there without any opposition and took the whole thing. And they were a cruel people. They just murdered and ravished on every hand. They had no regard for art or anything. What art and so on was left, if they could, they destroyed it. They had no written language, so we have no records of their own what they did. They never had a written language. Now, today, people don't realize what a kingdom they might have had. Now, I forget where the... I can't even remember exactly what was David. He should be greater than Agag. Now, Agag was a king of the Amalekites at a time when they were most powerful. Now, a lot of people think, well, if they were just a little band of people who were running around and smiting other people and robbing and so on, why would they speak of being greater than Agag? Well, then there's another thing, too. That when they were finally conquered, it says that that conquering affected from Havilah to Egypt. Now, Havilah is way up in the land of Assyria, where the gold used to be, up in there around Ophir and Havilah. And that covered a lot of territory. Well, we begin to find out from other records we have of these peoples and so on, these Amalekites at one time were practically world rulers. Now, they did not build our capital in Egypt. They had fled the Arabian Peninsula and took over Egypt. Some of them went on up into Palestine and some up into, that is, on the southern border of it, and some even clear beyond the Jordan on the east side. But they did build them a capital. And it was a place where they could encamp with around 250,000 soldiers, besides all of the people that lived there and so on. A city. It has three different names. It is on the river of Egypt, but that's not the Nile. In fact, it's a river that's dry in the summertime. Well, one name to the city is Rhino. Well, let's see. I always have trouble with that word because it's been spelled different ways. I think I have it down here somewhere. Oh, yes. Rhino Kokura. Rhinocchiura, which simply means the city of the cut-off noses. Back in that time, when a man was punished pretty severely for misdeed and so on, he'd cut his nose off. And then he was reckoned unclean because he'd looked like a man who had leprosy. But one of the first things that had the man had leprosy, his nose had brought off, and his ears, and so on, and fingers and toes. Any protruding parts of his body went first. It's also called El Arish. L-A-R-I-S-H. E-L-A-R-I-S-H. But at that time, when it was a fork, it was Auraris. A-U-A-R-I-S. And that was their stronghold for close to 500 years. Just shortly after Israel left Egypt, they went in and took Egypt, set up this great fort here to hold all their holdings so nobody could come from the north, especially. And that would be north of the great fortress that Egypt had, which was called Shur, at the end of the great wall that they built. And this fort was finally taken under the reign of Saul, and taken in practically the same way that in later years Cyrus took Babylon. In fact, a great deal of the battle, according to their records, was fought in the old dry riverbed or flowed into the city. And of course, when there was no water in there, they could go in, and they could batter down the gates along the river, why they could get into the city. So there was where it was. And King Saul helped Egypt to throw off the reign of the Amalekites. Now, Egypt has a record of that, but they don't mention Saul. They never did mention anybody else but their own heroes. They did say one did so-and-so, one did so-and-so. They just called him one, but didn't mention him by name. And of course, we have the record in the Bible of the siege of the city and the conquering and the saving of King Agag alive, which you're not supposed to do. I'm giving a little bit of history here as a background on this to show who some of these Amalekites and so on were. Well, let's see here. We're going to go on and see about the warfare about them when we got into Judges. And let's see here. We had 3:13 to 15. And also 6:3. We'll turn over to 6:3. Chapter 6, third verse, Judges. The name pops up again. And so it was, that when Israel had sown, that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites, and the children of the east, even they came up against them. And that was one of the habits that the Amalekites had. They'd wait till people had their sowing all done, their harvest was ripe, and they'd swarm in and take everything. And they did that over and over. Yeah. They were a pest. Well, I think Gideon did something here. Well, I have another one here. Let's see which one to take first. I'll take 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 15. First Samuel 15, 2-9, and also verse 11. And so here Samuel is telling about to Saul about what he should do. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. And Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telem, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and waited in the valley. And Saul said to the Kenites, now this city here is the one they're telling about, Oraris, down the south part of Palestine. And he said to the Kenites, now they were a part of them, and they were in the city, says, go depart, get ye down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For ye showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So they were rewarded for that. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah. Now here it is, the record, from Havilah. So he must have done a lot of smiting from clear up in Assyria. So thou comest to Shur, that is, over against Egypt, clear to the border of Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people raised to the sword. Verse 11, it repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he hath turned back from following me, and hath not performed my commandment. Interesting how other historians treat some of those. Not too badly sometimes. Well, let's just go back right here before we go on with 2 Samuel. That'll be 1 Samuel again. Numbers 14:42. I probably should have brought that in before, but pretty hard to get these in a real logical order. I said Numbers 14. I'll get it there after a while. And long chapters in there. Numbers 14, 42 to 45. Now this is one that I've mentioned to you about here, and this is when Israel came to the border of Canaan at Kadesh Barnea. And when Moses told them what the Lord said, that they'd have to perish in the wilderness, and they were going to change their mind, they were going to go anyhow, try to break through. And Moses said, go not up, for the Lord is not among you, that ye be not smitten before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and ye shall fall by the sword, because ye are turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up under the hill top. Nevertheless, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. So they went even without the Ark of the Covenant and without Moses. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites which dwelt on that hill, and smote them and discomfited them even unto Hormah. Now that is our second clash with the Amalekites. Their first one had received them, and here is just almost 40 years later, just about 40 years later at Kadesh Barnea. So you see, the one big reason for their not entering the land from the south was because of the Amalekites. Well, they have the Amorites though to deal with over on the other side, as we said, so I don't know which is the worst. Maybe Israel wasn't ready to go into the land yet. I think that's the main thing. They weren't ready. And it took a little while longer. Now, I think I made a mistake here in my figures, did I? Were you watching me? and my mind slipped again. Was it 40 years from Rephidim to Kadesh Barnea? It was 40 years from Rephidim to Jericho, yes. But it was 2 years from Rephidim to Kadesh Barnea. Then another 38 years of wandering. You want to watch me. And don't hesitate to speak up when I'm wrong, because I want to keep these things corrected. That's about all I have here to help me, is just some references typed down, and that's about all I have. All right, now that, as I said, was our second encounter, and we had these other encounters in with in Judges. I have left out the reference to one of these. We had Judges 3:13-15, and, or did we? Yeah, we had that, didn't we? And, we had 1 Samuel 15. I've left out Ehud and, Gideon, have I? No, I had him. All right, now, 1 Samuel 27:8. We'll get David into the picture. He has to fight these folks too. 1 Samuel 27:8. And David and his men went up and invaded the Geshurites and the Gezerites and the Amalekites, for these nations were of old inhabitants of the land, as thou goest ashore, as found even unto the land of Egypt. And David smote the land, and left neither man nor woman alive, and took away the sheep and the oxen and the asses and the camels and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. And he was among the Philistines, and they wanted to know where he went. And we said he went over and fought against Judah. Well, he was down there working against their own allies. They didn't know where he's going. Good thing they didn't have all the means of communication then that they have now, or he couldn't have gotten away with that, could he? I think we have... In chapter 30, 1 Samuel, verse 1, and it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag, and smitten Ziklag and burned to the fire, and had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, neither great or small, but carried them away, and went on their way. So David and his men went to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept, until they had no more power to weep. And David's two wives were taken captives, Ahinoam and the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And David was greatly distressed for the people's spake of stoning him, because the soul of the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And David said to Abiathar the priest, Abimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And Abiathar thought hither the ephod to David. And David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. So David went, he and the 600 men were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those that were left behind stayed. But David pursued, and he and 400 men, for 200 abode behind, which were so faint they could not go over the brook Besor. And so on. Well, David took them, and verse 17. And David smote them from the twilight even to the evening of the next day. and there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men which rode upon camels and fled. So David really did a pretty good job there. Now we might go over into 2 Samuel chapter 8. Second Samuel 8:12. Well, here's David had been having some wars, and he had a lot of booty that he brought. And it says, the verse before, which also King David did dedicate unto the Lord, with the silver and gold he had dedicated of all nations which he subdued, Assyria and Moab, and the children of Ammon, and the Philistines, and Amalek, there it is, and of the spoil of Hadadezer, son of Rehob, king of Zobah. And so there's the name again. So the Amalekites keep getting worse of it, but remember there's a lot of them. They had a chance to recover between times. 1 Chronicles 4. That's after the kings. First Chronicles 4:42. Well, I won't go into all of this history right here. Just 42. And some of them, even of the sons of Simeon, 500 men went to Mount Seir. That'd be Mount Seir is down southeast a little bit of the Dead Sea, having for their captains Pelatiah. So far as I know, this is about the only place that this name is mentioned, and that's rather a famous name, because Pelatiah Webster was the man who really invented our Constitution in the United States. He was a cousin of Noah Webster and Daniel Webster. And Neariah and Rephaiah and Uzziel the sons of Ishi, and they smote the rest of the Amalekites who were escaped and dwelt there unto this day. So the Simeonites were in on it too. Now for the last of the Amalekites, and that's what I was titling this, the end of Amalek. Turn over to the book of Esther. That's right between Nehemiah and Job. Esther, the third chapter, first verse. After these things did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, there makes him a Amalekite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had also commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Mordecai was a Jew, and he had a high position. Then the king's servants which were in the king's gate said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matter would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai abided not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had showed him the people of Mordecai, that is, that he was a Jew. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai, the Jews. And so the plot went. Well, we won't go through all of that. We will just go over to the ninth chapter. and get the end of it. Chapter 9 and 7 to 10. This means the sons of Haman, they were destroyed, killed. For Shandatha, Daphan, and Apatha, and Porhatha, and Adelia, and Aradatha, and Barmashta, and Arasai, and Aradai, and Avedzatha, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hamadatha, the enemy of the Jews, slew they, but on the spoil they laid not their hand. That was the end of the Amalekites. There have been none of them since. And God's word was, he said that they would be destroyed from under heaven, and their name even forgotten. It isn't forgotten yet, but it will be. Well, now that's taking up just about all of our time, I think. I've given you just about all that I had on Amalek. Now I got to take up the Amorites next. So you can look that up in the meantime, see who they are, where they came from.